The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Pedalin Ron. You are listening to Bicycle Talk, episode 466. To be broadcast on Wednesday, December 24th, Christmas Eve, on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. She's off to work today and trying to catch up on everything before the holidays here. If you're watching on Facebook Live, you can feel free to comment down here below. I may or may not be able to get back to you. If you're listening to this in an audio file, you can simply send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, and now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's rant of the week. At a time when bicycles could truly save our planet and our attitudes towards internal combustion engines and selfish mobility are rising, U.S. bike imports were down 24% in 2025 and in units and 16% in dollar value through September of this year, according to new data released by bicyclereteller.com. I'll talk about that a little bit more in the show. On a positive side, 5 million rides and counting. Paris's busiest bike sets record. Bike lane, I'm so sorry. I got that wrong. 5 million bike rides and counting. Paris's busiest bike lane sets a record. And I'll talk a little bit more about that in the show. Yeah, you know what? Bikes are here to stay. We're definitely we're on a roll in some parts of the world. If other parts of the world, let's say, like, you know, our particular part of the world would pay attention to what's going on in the rest of the world as far as cycling goes, it would be a beautiful thing, wouldn't it? Okay, well, we'll move on. I'm not supposed to be ranting. I'm supposed to be talking about the positive side. Another positive thing that I found was the Car-Free Carolers. Streets Blog's Car-Free Carolers bring joy, mirth, and ho-ho hope to this holiday season. Yeah, the Streets Blog singers are back, and they're belting out their parody classics to make a serious point. New York's roadways don't have to be a dangerous place for kids and lungs, but can be a joyous space for people to walk around, shop, eat, or just hang out. I'll talk a little bit more about that in the show. And front page Harper Current, well, not front page, but anyway, on in the Harper Current today, Connecticut starts nearly $3.7 million job of extending the Central Rail Trail. And I'll talk about what is planned on that. So that would be the Farmington Valley Trail, and we'll get to that in just a bit. Mechanical Minute and Bike Tips. How to ride a bike with a Christmas tree. If you haven't gotten your Christmas tree yet, then you're running a little late, but that's okay. You can still get it, and you can still get it by bicycle. Yeah, I know. I found an article on how to get a Christmas tree with a bicycle. I couldn't refuse this one. This is just too much fun, mainly because it's, you know, it's the time of year. It's 5 ways to transport varying sizes of Christmas trees home by bike. Fun stuff, folks. Christmas time is here. We're only a couple days away. And, you know, oftentimes people go out and get trees. And, of course, you take a look at a Christmas tree and you think, oh, I need a truck. I need, like, a big SUV. I need to haul this thing home. If you're buying a fresh-cut tree, or even if you're buying one that's pre-cut, you still need to be able to transport it. So what if you don't have anything but a bicycle to transport it with? Or what if you're just being increasingly stubborn as I am, and all you want to do is, you know, do as much as you can with your bicycle just because it's because. So if you So there's a few ways you can do this. Of course, if you have a cargo bike, then you've obviously got a bicycle that's got a fair amount of strength, and you can certainly just get your tree wrapped if it's not wrapped already, and you can strap it down onto a cargo bike with some bungee cords. Make sure you strap it down real good, because it's going to flop around, or tend to flop around. You don't want it falling on from one side or to the other side as you're riding. So that definitely is something you got to be a little bit cautious about. But you can do this. So, you know, with a cargo bike, of course, you've got an advantage, because you've got a beast that can handle something like this. If you don't, many bicycles have found that a workaround for non-cargo bikes, the bike trailer. Of course, the trailer. Now, I have not one, not two, but three different trailers that in my possession. One of my trailers is a definitely a kid-friendly trailer with the kid seats in the back and all that, which I had back in the day, back when Greg was small. And I also was selling a lot of those because I was working for Burley Trailer Design, and you know, it was my sample also as far as that went. But I think the latest one I have actually was more of a sample than it was the original one I started out with. But as you look around, like at your local transfer station, sometimes you'll find things like bicycle trailers set aside in we have a wonderful little thing called the swap shop at our transfer station, where you'll find people dropping off things that are still able to be used, and so they drop them off and you can pick them up for free, which is kind of cool. Now, I of course have collected a couple of them by doing that, because I could not believe the trailers that were being dropped off. Perfectly good trailers. Sure, they're a little faded, you know, that nylon gets pretty faded by the sun, and they don't look as nice as they did when they were brand new, but they're great for carrying things. And sometimes you can modify the trailers for your needs. So I have two particular trailers that can still transport things with a safe cup with a cover over the top, which will keep things dry. One, of course, is set up for kids, and the other one is set up for whatever you might want to use it for, maybe grocery shopping, that sort of thing. And then I have a third trailer, of which I took I basically broke it all down to the frame and made it into a flatbed. And the flatbed is perfect for doing something like this, because you can strap basically anything on there. The day I showed up at the Home Depot down the street here from my house, which is right off of the rail trail, which makes it super convenient to do something like this. But anyway, the day I showed up there and was rolling out some lumber to my trailer, my bike trailer, I got some looks. Oh my God, did I get some looks. And you know, you just strap everything on real good. Good cargo straps are well worth it in a situation like this, because you really want everything very, very secure, so that it's not going to you know, flop to the sides. I also have kept with that trailer the ability to put up side panels on it, so that if I want to keep something from falling over the edge and into the wheels of the trailer, I can use it that way too. But you would be amazed how much you can pull with a trailer, with a bike trailer. It's really amazing. So you can secure your Christmas tree onto your bike trailer, and then you can pull your Christmas tree home. So that's kind of a cool thing. And the length counts, okay? If you have a bike trailer, if you have neither a bike trailer nor a bike trike or a box bike, let's say a cargo style bike, you can basically just strap your Christmas tree lengthwise. I don't like this idea. Along the back of a rack that's just not going to work. That's going to have to be a pretty small tree. The tree I got is way too big for that, and definitely you would have some difficulty with that. But, you can also, make sure that if you do not have, if you're going to pick up a tree and the tree is already opened up and you're not getting it from a nice tree farm like my friend right down the street here. My friend Steve has a nice tree farm and he puts his trees through a baler, which puts a nice wrapping all around it, keeps it tight. You go there with your bike trailer or whatever else you're going to use, your cargo bike or whatever, and you can simply bring an old sheet with you, like an old bedroom sheet that you might have bed sheet that you might have used for maybe your rag bag downstairs in your garage or in your workshop or whatever, and you can simply just roll it and wrap it up in the sheet and then just bring some twine and tighten it up and voila, a tree in a bag, and there you go. So that's the way to do it. Now if you're really talented, and I'm going to say really talented because I would not suggest this at all, you could always have it all wrapped up like that and put it underneath one of your arms and then pedal home like that. But first of all, that better be a short trip. And second of all, you better have some serious arm strength and some really, really good balance to do that sort of thing. So that is another way that you could do it. So any number of ways work, but it's important that you make sure you balance the load in the back. I think the trailer is really the best option here for certain. You could even, I suppose, modify your own set of wheels, which would wrap around the tree, and then you could pull it that way. To me, the bike trailer is the answer here. And if you're not in possession of your very own cargo bike trailer yet, that is something to put on your wish list. Maybe Santa Claus will bring it to you. What do you think? So that's how you pull a trailer home, a tree home on to bring your Christmas tree home with your bicycle. Anyway, let's move on to something else less silly. So going on into this, we've got a few things to talk about here today. Let's see here, pull this guy up. So we've got more protected bike lanes are a big issue going on right now, and it's just becoming more and more of a conversation point whenever you are talking with anyone within your town, maybe those that are on planning and zoning that are planning on different things and projects into town, that the bike lanes really boost your ridership. They make a huge difference. So I'm always pushing this. I think it's a really good idea. I think it adds to the safety of the entire issue as far as both car and also bicycle safety go. And you just got to get out there and work on getting this done. Because the end results are that protected bike lanes save lives, protected bike lanes increase traffic of bicycling, and it will also attract scooters and e-bikes and other types of mobility units, skateboards even possibly. Would be on something in something like this, but you really got to take a real good look at the whole micro mobility idea here. Micro mobility is really good because we're not talking about internal combustion engines and pollution and environmental concerns, and so micro mobility is truly an answer for today's current affairs that we have going on. So that's why I'm such a big promoter and supporter of this sort of thing. A lot of cities have a tough time building infrastructure, and it's very, very understandable, but if it's thrown into the main plan, especially if there's a large paving project which is happening or reconditioning of the road project that's happening, it doesn't cost that much more to put in the mobility lane as you would think. because it's just, it's pavement is pavement, and that's what it is. And it's about $1 million a mile, but if you can put that extra 6 feet on and then put a protecting curb on there, it'll just change the way people transport themselves. Sigh. I'm always beating this dead horse, but that's what I'm doing. So let's take a look at some other things here. I had mentioned earlier that that website StreetsBlog, which I really like a lot, StreetsBlog.org. They always have some fun stuff in there, and they had a fun thing here for the holidays, which I thought was a little hope, as far as they say here. So the StreetsBlog singers are back, and yes, they ride their bicycles, and they're called the Car-Free Carolers, and they spread their mirth over 34th Street in Queens last week, and they sing, they joke, they occasionally miss a note, and for the first time in 4 years, the Car-Free Carolers are back, using parody lyrics, lots of Yuletide spirit, and of course, plenty of eggnog. These flamboyant flaneurs make a serious point about New York's sclerotic roadways. That's quite a word. They don't have to be dangerous places for kids, as long as they can be joyous places for people to walk around and, you know, go caroling, biking. So anyway, they have a bunch of songs here, and maybe I'll just post this on the Facebook page, because this is just too much fun, and you need to check it out. See, they were clearly inspired by the Bing Crosby rendition of the 34 holiday classic, though in the tune of Winter Wonderland, and it's called Biking Wonderland. And I'll just give you a again, I will post this site, because this is too much fun. I'm going to just copy that, and I'll put it over on my Facebook page. This, again, is to the tune of Winter Wonderland. I am not going to sing for you, by the way, so I will not torture you with that. But if you can put the general idea in your brain of Winter Wonderland, start with Car-Free Streets, It Can Happen, Biking Network, Close the Gaps In, It's Vision Zero, We Need a Hero to Build Us a Biking Wonderland. And it goes on and on and on. It's very, very funny. And then there's also Frosty the Snowman, which is also listed here. And this is Eric the Con Man. Anyway, and this goes along with the current political climate that we have going on, and it's Eric the Con Man told a lie to all of us, drove all over town, never biked around, so we left him in the dust. Eric the Con Man was so bad at governing, failed to build bus lanes, that he always claims it was so discomforting. There must have been an error when New York elected him, because after 4 eternal years, we soundly rejected him. Oh, Eric the Con Man, we have thrown him out the door. No ineptitude and bad attitude. We can't take a minute more. Yeah, these are fun. You really, really should check these out. And obviously, you have to realize that they're very current event oriented, including the newly elected Mayor Zoran Mandani, who is becoming one of the more talked about mayors of New York City. And in your dreaming of a white Christmas, they're dreaming of a good bus quickness, which Mayor Zoran pledged to me. It's a test litmus of mayoral fitness. If he fails, he's surely dead to me. We need bus quickness. Working New Yorkers are abused. All the drivers blocking make buses worse than walking. We're so tired, we are not amused. You know, a little bit of little bit of bicycle humor here, a little bit of mobility humor here. There are many of them on here, and it's really, really fun. And I think that, like I said, I will put it on my Facebook page, on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page, and I'll let you guys be the judges of the lovely Streets Blog car-free carolers in New York City. It's that time of year. We gotta lighten up here a little bit, right? So let's get rid of that and move on to something else here. So I found a few other things which I thought would be interesting to talk about. And here we go. So let's talk about those bicycle imports. And this is, you know, this is a little disturbing, but as I have gone around to different bicycle shops in my area and just reviewed them and interviewed with them about how their year was, because I'm always interested in seeing how the year, how the years are, I kind of got some alarming results. And that is now being supported by Bicycle Retailer Industry News, where they're talking about U.S. bike imports down 24% in units and 16% in dollar value through September of this year. That's through September of this year. It's crashing even more right now. Through the first three quarters, U.S. imported 6.3 million bikes, down from 8.3 million over the last period, same period last year. The import value was $667 million, down from $792 million. September imports from most countries declined steeply from recent months, with imports from China down 37% in dollar value from August. Following the federal government shutdown, the census resumed releasing import data last month, with August data, the latest release for the September date, is about a month later than its normal schedule. The agency was not announcing a full data release schedule. So, these numbers may be a little bit skewed because of the fact that we did have that shutdown, and that's made a difference, but sad to see that at a time when we could really, really use more help in that particular direction, there's the answers on the bike, folks. I talk about it all the time. I'm constantly promoting the idea of the bicycle being the pretty much the solution to a lot of the problems that exist right now. Reduces congestion, reduces pollution, reduces environmental impact, on and on and on and on. And then, that's what we got. That's what we got. So let's talk about a few more things that are in the bicycle business. This is something that I had pulled up a few weeks ago that I was going to talk about, and I had not run it by you folks. So you might want to check into this if you are a bicycle advocate, and if you are looking at some sort of a program within your town, this is a really, really good thing. If you have an organization like we have here in Mansfield, we have Bike Mansfield, or sometimes you'll have a bike walk group in your area. Park Tool has opened an application window for community grants. And this was published back on December 3rd. Like I said, I'm so sorry I didn't get to this right away because this is kind of an important thing. This is the 11th year the program has donated for over $135,000 worth of tools to organizations throughout the world. For 2026, Park Tool will award grants consisting of bicycle tools and repair stands to 10 nonprofit organizations or community groups. Each of the 10 grant recipients will receive over $1,600 in Park Tool products. That would be including a Park Tool PK5 Professional Mechanic Toolkit, two Park Tool PCS 10.3 portable repair stands, five Park Tool SA shop aprons, one Park Tool BB4 Big Blue Book of Bicycle Repair. So that's kind of a nifty thing. And They said here, last year they were so excited to see the hundreds of bicycle-related organizations who sent in applications for their community tool grants. Each one is making a significant contribution to getting all walks of life on bicycles for transportation, fun, and fitness. And they look forward to reading through the applications for the consideration of the 2026 grants. So that was from Eric Hawkins, who is Park Tools president and owner. And the applications will be accepted December 3rd until December 31st at parktool.com/form/community-tool-grant-request. And the winners will be announced in late January. And once again, I will highlight that and put it onto the Facebook page too, if you're looking for that information. So it's a great little piece of good news. I'm trying to keep a good news theme here on this show today. It's not always easy. For next year, as far as if you have an organization that you really think, and this is especially big if you're in like a pretty big city, an inner city, and you really want to get a program running in your city that will help promote and encourage young people back onto bicycles, and also learning how to repair bicycles and learning all the great aspects of cycling. This is a really, really good program. So if you have any questions about it whatsoever, you can always reach directly to Park Tool, and they're the leading supplier of bicycle tools in this country, possibly around the world. I used Park Tools right from the very beginning when I became a bicycle mechanic. I definitely had a lot of Park Tools in my possession. It's a good company. They make good products. Very, very nice. Very, very nice. So let's kick that one out. And I also, in the bicycle industry, I wanted to bring this up too, because everybody talks about tariffs. Not always great news, but let's talk a little bit about some of the tariffs and how steel and aluminum tariffs are calculated on bikes. So the reason that steel and aluminum tariffs affect bikes is because some products, including e-bikes, chains, exercise bikes, trainers, and some hand tools, are already subject to this Section 232 tariff. The chains and tools were added in March. E-bikes and trainers were added in August. Now, Guardian Bikes and an aluminum extruder trade group have requested that all bikes, bike frames, and some e-bikes are being added to the derivative lists, both Section 232 steel and aluminum tariffs. In addition, these new tariffs would apply to imports from all countries. People for Bikes said such a move would be crushing to the industry. Already is crushing to the industry, urging industry members to leave comments in opposition of the Department of Commerce website. Not that anybody will read it, because there's no one working there, but that's another story. Since the first list of derivatives was released in the spring, importers have struggled to understand how to apply them. So an aggressive approach from which some importers have taken is to assume that Section 232 tariffs were intended to apply to new raw value of materials in the product. That makes the cost relatively small, because even an e-bike with an import value of $1,000 might contain only 40 pounds of raw steel and perhaps 50 cents per pound, and the cost would be less than $10, not counting other tariffs. But anyway, so it goes by the actual weight of the material that's being used, and there's different applications in different areas. So just to give you a rough idea, steel cassette, which is the gear on the back of the bike, it might cost the bike brand $11 for that. A frame could cost $100. A handlebar that costs $4 in the end. A bike valued at $1,000 at import might contain steel and aluminum components worth over $900. So a 50% Section to tariff would add an extra $450 to the tariffs on that bike. And that is why my retailers are not real happy right now, because it's extremely difficult to offer an entry-level price point bicycle to the consumer without them going to serious sticker shock. This is not a good thing. There should be certain things that are exempt from this sort of thing, and things that are true necessities and true bonuses to our world as we know it should not have any of this going on. But then again, you know, we're in a very, very strange political time right now, so this is what we're going to have to deal with. And the major problem is that most of the product that is coming into our country that is bicycle related, due to the fact that most of the manufacturing has been shifted over to Asia, it's all coming from Asia. And that's where these tariffs are being hit. That's where they're hitting us the hardest. So if you're looking at buying a new bicycle and you're in for and you're dealing with sticker shock, breathe deep. Midterms are coming. Those who vote bad things can be voted out of office. So anyway, we will leave it at that. This is definitely something that is disturbing in the short come. Maybe you're going to have to put off that new bicycle for a little while longer until things settle out, and maybe put a little effort into the old bicycle, maybe get it all fixed up or something like that. That's also going to cost you a little bit more, because price of all parts and accessories for bicycles has gone way up too, due to the fact that we have said tariffs on said equipment. So that is definitely a problem that we are experiencing. Let's go to something just a little bit more positive. So we're going to talk a little bit about Paris, and because there's just some amazing things going on there. You know, since COVID hit, I really think that has been the big changing point. And these bike lanes were just popping up right and left because people were not getting into mass transportation. They were not using buses. They were not using trains. And everybody got a little freaked out. And, you know, if you live in Paris, most people owned bicycles, or they owned some other form of transportation they could get themselves around in. So anyway, they developed something called the Boulevard des Cespedes, and it ticked past 5 million trips this year. 5 million trips. That's a lot. The momentum had already taken on a symbolic weight far beyond a single Parisian street. The milestone announced by way of social media by Paris deputy mayor and mayoral candidate David Belliard confirmed that anyone who has tried to ride through the heart of the city knows the north-south artery had become one of the busiest bike corridors, not just in France, but in all of Europe. In North America, the busiest route is the bike lane across New York City's Williamsburg Bridge. That has 2 million trips. That's pretty impressive, too. Stretching through central Paris, the Boulevard de Sébastopol is no longer merely a thoroughfare connecting neighborhoods. Since its protected bike lane opened in 2019, it's evolved into a barometer of the city's transportation revolution. In early September of 2023, the route recorded a staggering 124,000 cyclists in a single week. By the end of the year, the annual volumes were already hovering near the 5 million mark. Numbers more commonly associated with subway lines and surface streets. It's a record this year. More than 5 million cyclists have borrowed Sebastopol Boulevard. Bravo, wrote Belliard on Instagram. We were told it wouldn't do anything and nobody would take these cycle paths, but in 6 years, we transformed Paris to improve your commute and your life, and records are breaking. And this is the only the beginning. On the average day, roughly 13 to 14,000 cycling trips now pass through the boulevard, depending on the season and the counter being referenced. At peak hours, cyclists bunch up at intersections, bells ring, and in a twist that would seemed unthinkable a decade ago. It's now regularly experiencing bicycle traffic jams. Who would have guessed? But, you know, that's it. It's but the most striking statistic arrived in June of 2024 when data showed that bicycles outnumbered cars on the boulevard for the first time. It was a profound moment, years in the making, a visual confirmation that Paris's long debated shift away from car dependency had crossed a psychological threshold. For generations, streets such as Sebastopol were designed first and foremost for automobiles. Now the hierarchy has been flipped. Urbanists often talk about the network effect, and Sebastopol is a textbook case. It's explosive growth isn't just about one well-designed lane. It's about the result of an entire system snapping into place. Over the past decade, Paris has added hundreds of kilometers of cycling infrastructure, knitting through neighborhoods that were once awkward and dangerous to reach on a bike. And more links were added. The busiest routes inevitably get busier, drawing in commuters, students, delivery riders, and casual cyclists alike. Pollution along levels along the boulevard are reported to be about 40% lower than they were in 2011, a decline attributed to the large part to reduced car traffic and normalization of cycling for everyday trips. What was once a noisy exhaust choke corridor has become a showcase for cleaner urban mobility, even if it now hums with the sound of freewheels and conversation instead of engines. Internationally, the boulevard's numbers rival the most famous cycling routes in Amsterdam and Copenhagen, cities long held as the gold standards of bicycle infrastructure. As a result, Paris has risen to the top five in the highly regarded Copenhagenized index of the world's most bicycle-friendly cities. Very cool. So, big tip of the cycling cap to Paris for what they are doing. It's just phenomenal. If you build it, they will come. It does work. It really does work. And that's why it's just so important for us to continue to focus on this. And I talked about this last week. The idea is to identify the busiest street in your city or town, not the least busy one, the busiest one, the one that has the most traffic on it. And that is where you have to begin, because if it's got the most car and truck traffic, then it will also have the most bicycle traffic, mainly because it's an avenue or an artery, as I spoke about arteries and veins and the way this all works. It is an artery for the transportation to get to one of these little side streets that you are trying to get to as far as your destination goes. So identify the artery, identify the street that is the one that really needs to have the infrastructure improvement on, and that is where you begin, and then you branch out from there. And it really is a solution. Now, the other thing that I have found, and this is important to pay attention to, is oftentimes that artery is going to be a state road, or a, as I like to call them, a road with numbers. My least favorite place to ride my bike is on a road with numbers because of how busy they are, unless they have built an infrastructure about it, and you can easily ride on it without being in great fear of your life. So anyway, find the road with numbers. Why is this important? Because the schedules for repairs and improvements on those roads are because of the heavy usage of the road, are often much more progressive than they would be on a side road. If you got a little side road, it's going to take them years and years and years before they do like a new pavement project. But if it's a major road, you'll find that there's often improvement projects that are at much, much shorter intervals. That's when you make your noise. You make your noise when they're getting ready to resurface or somehow rebuild that particular avenue to that's when you want to get involved with. You want to get in on the planning process of that. You got to find someone inside at your Department of Transportation that can give you that kind of information. And as I'm starting to notice, the more we have turnover at the Department of Transportation here in Connecticut, the more bicycle-friendly people are starting to work there. So that's important. That's real, real important to find that person or those people and identify with them and keep pressing on them and talking to them about upcoming projects. And like I said, it doesn't cost any more in pavement. It's still $1 million a mile, no matter what you're looking at here. That's what it costs. And if you could just get that extra 6 feet, it makes a huge, huge difference. So, or some sort of reconstruction of the sidewalk structure and the pedestrian and bicycle structure. There's just a lot of ways to do it. It's not that hard. We just had a project up in Storrs that was done on Route 275 South Eagleville Road, a road that sports not only a name but a number. Horrible road to ride a bike on. It was the section that they improved, I will say, was probably one of the safer parts of that road, but the unfortunate approach of traffic at speeds that were at least twice the speed limit that was posted on the road. Yeah, it's all true. Twice. It's a 30 mile an hour road and people were driving 60 miles an hour on it. The speeds of which they approached this area where it was much, much busier because it was very close to campus here at the University of Connecticut, that's where the life-threatening parts came in. So they basically traffic calmed it, and it's great. It's really, really wonderful. And they did put the toilet paper of bicycle safety out there. They put the sharrows out in the road, but they put them in the actual travel lane instead of off on the shoulder. And because they narrowed the shoulders and they narrowed the street in general to make the road a slower paced road. So now it appears that bicycles also belong in the roadway versus on that very sharp and narrow shoulder. So that was good. That's good. They could have done something else, but I'm gonna take baby steps here, not giant leaps. I'll just take baby steps. So there's improvements out there, and it's happening. Austin, Texas is another one of those. Austin, they've got a long ways to go before they get to their Vision Zero. So there's a road that at least 75 people have died on each of the 10 years since the Texas Capitol formally pledged to eliminate traffic fatalities and serious injuries. In 2024, 97 people were killed, an uptick of 7 deaths from the year prior. That city transportation officials said was avoidable and unacceptable. As those same officials take a look back over the last decade, though, they also say there's a deeper story behind the statistics that deserves to be heard, especially by those growing impatient with the country's slow progress to curb traffic violence. There have been under-the-radar successes in Austin, Austin that could help other cities weather the state and federal headwinds that virtually all cities will battle with years to come. By the way, Austin, Texas, if you are not familiar with Austin, Texas, those of my friends and acquaintances that I worked with within the bicycle industry, Austin's a very bicycle-friendly town. It's also known as the Blue Dot in Texas, as far as politically goes, and it is their state capital, so it does tend to have some political undertones because of that. So it is interesting. I knew guys, men and women both, that were repping the bicycle industry and in the state of Texas. And of course, when you had Texas, you also had Oklahoma, and it was just an enormous territory. But they all lived in Austin. So Austin can sometimes be compared to Portland, Oregon. And there are bumper stickers that are out that say, keep Austin weird. For what reason, I don't understand that. There's a lot of entertainment there. The entertainment industry is definitely very settled into Austin. But anyway, they have a long-term goal of going to this whole Vision Zero, which is basically to cut down dramatically on traffic fatalities, which are occurring on a regular basis right now. And they'll get there. They'll definitely get there. They're just, they've got work ahead of them. They've got 2,800 miles of streets largely built around automobiles. And, you know, they've got, again, identify the arteries, build from the arteries out, and everything gets a lot better. And it also starts slowing down the arteries, and that's the key here. The more we can put in bicycle specific lanes that are protected lanes, it does require a little bit of a narrowing of the general flow of traffic. And by narrowing that flow of traffic, you do decrease the speed. So there's a solution to anything, any kind of problem out there. And this one solution is great. You know, just visually making it look like it's a little too small of a road for me to drive fast on. Great idea. Wider, faster by design. Oof, just deadly by design, as my friend Dave put into an article a number of years ago. So the idea is you've got to reduce highway speeds. You've got to reduce secondary road speeds. And until you do, people are going to get hurt, and it's not just going to be bicycle car related or car bicycle related incidents. It's going to be car related incidents too. It's just not a good thing. So, oh boy. Yeah. And then they have an article. Oh boy. I don't know if I want to read that. That might get a little depressing. Who owns the most dangerous roads in America? Likely in your state, by any chance? Oh, I don't know if we're going to go on this. I might have to save this one, excuse me, for another date and time. So if you have a particular road which is standing out, and that is the road to focus on, it really is. You just... You gotta figure out what it is that you can do to get some input in there. Great way to do it is to ride your bicycle to that town meeting and ride with, I don't know, say another dozen people or so on bicycles, and show up dressed for cycling. Show up representing the idea that you got there by bicycle, that you did not drive a motorized vehicle to get there. You gotta walk the walk and talk the talk. It really makes a huge difference. Okay, what else is on here that we should be addressing? The cyclocross calendar is we're on the World Cup calendar right now, so it has definitely moved on to the big guys, the big boys and girls playing in the cycling world. Matthew Vanderpoel is just like crazy great this year again. He's going back into it as he started out in cyclocross. We're going to see yet more of them. He's just such an outstanding rider to watch. He's just got an amazing amount of power and an amazing amount of skill also for the whole cyclocross experience. And there's a little piece here about Matthew Vanderpoel was met with an unruly spectator who blew vape smoke in his face at the end of winning performance at the Trophy Hofstad in Belgium. Really? Really, 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 people. Really? Do you have to do that? The world champion was racing his final lap of the elite men's hour-long race and on his way to a solo victory when a spectator leaned over the fencing as he passed to blow a cloud of smoke in his face. The action forced him to turn his head away from the smoke. His racing glasses likely prevented smoke from getting in his eyes. Yes, I felt it. It was right at the finish, wasn't it? And I don't know if it was intentional because I didn't see, Vanderpoel told the press. But it's not the first time Matthew Vanderpoel has faced abuses from spectators during road and cyclocross races where he's been spat on, had items thrown at him. In some cases, authorities have subsequently launched investigations into the incidents and have increased police presence at the events. I don't really want to say anything more about it. Reacting to something is just stupid. It's just plain stupid. That's what they say about it. Anyway, it's a shame that something gets so much attention. All the riders were very positive. This is a fantastic course, blah, blah, blah. That's it. But, you know, I can't say I haven't seen it before. I remember when we finally started getting broadcast TV to show us at least clips from the Tour de France back in the Eddie Merckx days. And CBS was the big network that got involved in this, and they did an hour-long show every weekend, which had highlights from the Tour de France. But one of those highlights was Eddie Merckx, a Belgian, who was obviously dominating back in those days as far as the Tour de France went. He won it 5 times. I watched as they showed a footage of a spectator stepping out from the crowd and leaning in and punching him in the gut, breaking a couple of his ribs, right? This guy's winning the race. Breaking a couple of his ribs, and then, of course, that had to have knocked the wind out of him if he got hit hard enough. Well, think about it. He's going 15, 20 miles an hour on a bike. A guy steps out, gives him a hard hit right into the ribs. That's probably a much bigger impact than even that. So anyway, broke some ribs, continued to get patched up, and won the Tour again that year. But spectators can be rough, and it's a problem because, you know, in the world of cycling, okay, the world of cycling, it's just there's not a lot of restrictions as far as spectators go because you're not in an arena. Not that arenas can be any safer. We've seen some pretty crazy World Cup football or soccer, as we know it here in the U.S. They've been some pretty crazy things going on there too. But on the open road, when admission is free and anybody can just stand on the side of the road and watch the riders go by, it's hard to restrict this. I think that more can be done for the safety of the riders, especially when they're coming in towards the finish line, and they can keep the crowds pushed a little bit further away. But you get to the top of one of these mountains, and they're literally touching the riders, running alongside of them, giving them pushes. It's just insanity. I can't imagine what that must be like for a professional rider to be dealing with that sort of thing. But it does happen, and fortunately, it doesn't happen that much. And as we finish off the end of the year, I think we're going to see more of Wout van Aert and Matthew Vanderpoel once again running the game. They are just so incredibly good at this sport. And if you get a chance, go to YouTube and you can pull these things down and watch them on YouTube. They're just fascinating to watch the skill level of what these guys are doing. And just looking at some of the extremely difficult they go through deep mud and sand and all sorts of crazy things that would just bog down anybody on a bike. And these guys make it look like they're just out for a ride. They've just got all this power and they've got all of this, they've got all the skill that they've been doing for years. I think it's a great sport. I still love it dearly. It's over within an hour. You don't have to spend all afternoon watching it. You can just watch, you know, watch the men's race, watch the women's race, and then you're done. So it doesn't require as much time as it does to watch the UConn Huskies play basketball, which can take more hours. But anyway, it's that time of year here in stores. We are definitely in the midst of crazy basketball season. So anyway, we're going to keep our eyes on for the next few weeks and into January and February, all the way up to the World Championships. Going to keep our eyes on this whole cyclocross thing and see how everybody's doing, because right now it looks like the same old is out there doing whatever they have to do. Matthew Vanderpoel destroying all to win as Wout van Aert finishes second or seventh or whatever, but it's all Matthew right now. So we shall see what happens there in the future. We are running out of time here, folks. So I am going to, let me see, where am I at here? Yes, I am going to bring us to our conclusion for today. And that will be I think really what I want to say is I want you to have a safe and happy holiday. If you're listening to this live on the radio, then you're going to be hearing this on Christmas Eve. And let's be positive. Let's be safe. And thank everyone around you for what you have. Bicycling is freedom. Life is better for everyone when more people ride bikes. Cycling is an easier and safer option for more people because when more people ride bikes, the people are happier and healthier, our communities are safer and friendlier, and our planet is greener. Together, we can help more people know the joy of bicycling. I'll say it again, it won't be my last time. I want you to get loud, get active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic, dangerous roads, the price of gas, and the lack of places to safely ride, and do your part. Show up at a town meeting. Take the Pedal and Run Challenge. Pedal and Run Challenge is park your car or truck one day. Just use your bike instead. You will surprise yourself. And remember, whether you're riding your bike or you're driving your car, please be safe and kind. The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You have been listening to Bicycle Talk without my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. If you're watching on Facebook Live, you can leave your comments right down here below. And if you're listening to this on an audio file, you can just send me an email at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. I would love to hear from you. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, or now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. If you'd like to contribute information to the show or be a guest, you can always drop me an email. This is Pedal and Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. It really could save your life. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy New Year coming up. Talk to you next week.